Hello, welcome to My Camino, the podcast. I'm Dan Mullins.
Someone once said to me, you take the world's worries on your shoulder, you can't fix everybody. And I thought, no, I know, but it's nice to try and help people.
That's this week's guest, Catherine Davey. And this week's discussion, amongst other things, talks about walking a Camino with teenagers. This is a weekly podcast about the Camino de Santiago, or the Way of St. James. And if you are walking to prepare for the Camino, you might like to download the podcast app on your phone and search for My Camino, hit subscribe and download all the episodes. There are 230 interviews with pilgrims from all around the world. James was one of Christ's apostles, and there are so many documentaries and books and scholars and theorists speculating on what Christ's message was that James was so eager to teach. Well, I'm none of those experts, but I like to think it's about love. And one of the places on earth you can find people open to giving and receiving love is El Camino de Santiago, the ancient and spiritual paths across Europe, pilgrimages under the blessing of St. James. Most pilgrims hope to arrive in the majestic Baroque cathedral in the northwestern Spanish city of Santiago de Compostela, which is St. James under a field of stars. You walk into the town square with the cathedral towering over you. You may have walked 100 kilometres or 10,000 kilometres. It doesn't matter to you or anyone else in the square that day. You're a pilgrim who has arrived, and your arrival is as significant as any pilgrim over the last 1,500 years. You have arrived, the end point of your pilgrimage. But your actual pilgrimage will continue as you take what you have learned and loved from your journey on the Camino home with you. You might pause one day to help someone. You might say to the people in the lineup at the supermarket, "Go ahead, I have all the time in the world." You might say to your aging mother or father, "I want to talk. I want to forgive." You might say to a sibling that you haven't spoken to in a while, "Hey, my child wants to speak to your child." You might say to a neighbor, "Are you okay?" The Camino gives us the energy, the courage to be the best person we can be. I remember sitting with dozens of pilgrims in Santo Domingo de la Quesada. We were all ordering beers and wines, and the night got longer. Then someone said, "Oh, we should settle the bill." And a Spanish pilgrim who had walked past paid the bill for us without us even knowing. And it was such a beautiful gesture. We felt her blessing. We sought her out the next day to say thank you. The Camino provides these moving moments. And my Caminos have had an enormous impact on me and therefore on my family. And my sons tell everyone who asks, "It changed Dad for the better." And I wish I'd been able to take my sons as teenagers on the Camino, but COVID has put a stop to all of that. But there's an old saying attributed to the American columnist Bob Talbot. Teaching kids to count is fine, but teaching them what counts is best. Let's meet a pilgrim who took teenagers on the Camino. Catherine Davey wrote to me a little while back, and we sent a few messages back and forth, and I convinced her to appear on the podcast from Northern Ireland. Welcome, pilgrim.
Thank you. Lovely to be here. I'm very scared.
You don't have to be scared. Now, you wrote to me, Catherine, to say you listen to the podcasts on your daily walks in Northern Ireland. Tell us where. What are those walks like?
So I live kind of out in the country, so I have lots of lovely walks all around my home here. There's a nice 12-mile walk I do around the roads. But also we have what's called Divis Mountain, which is about 10 minutes away in the car. And it's a lovely mountain overlooking all of Belfast. For many years, it was the Ministry of Defence, the Army, were based there as a shooting range, and they would have been situated there during the Troubles. And the National Trust have bought it now, maybe 10, 12 years, so it's open to the public now. So it's about a 6.2-mile walk, the loop that I would do, and it's just overlooking all of the city. So I love heading up there with the dog for a good hike or a run. And I just never really was one for podcasts. And then I thought one day, oh, I'm going to listen to something. Because I like listening to the nature while I'm out and hearing the birds. And I'm very much a talker and I meet people and chat. But I thought, I found your podcast. And I thought, oh, and I started listening to them. So that became my daily little routine, popping the podcast on and taking myself off. And it probably got me around the road a bit quicker. And I was oblivious to everything around me, just imagine myself back on the Camino. So thank you for that, because it brings it all back. And with COVID, we haven't got there, and it just makes it all stay alive for us.
Oh, that's lovely. I'm so pleased that it's connected with you in Northern Ireland. I was there in the early 1990s, and I was telling Catherine before we started the interview that my heritage is from Tipperary in the Republic of Ireland, and I ended up wandering my way up into Northern Ireland when I was over there in the early 1990s, and I ended up in Portrush, and I did a lot of the walks around the beautiful countryside there, the Giant's Causeway, and it's some majestic, oh, the landscape up there is absolutely stunning. So you go 6 or 7 mile walk each day. That's quite a walk. That's, you obviously love walking.
Yeah, I love walking. I always walk. Funny, when I was thinking about this podcast, and there was 5 of us kids growing up, and we had no car. So we walked, the legs were walked off us. We were just walked everywhere. So my mom used to tell me I was the best walker in the house. So I think that was, looking back on that was just to get me to walk. So I would moan when I was walking. But, you know, she always said, we used to visit my granny every Saturday. And then she used to walk me back home, which was maybe 4 miles. And if I complained, she'd say, oh, come on, you're the best walker in the house. None of the rest of them are as good as you. You're the best walker. So I've always just loved my walking. And you said about the North Coast, we have like a caravan. I don't know what you'd call it, trailer, maybe you guys call it. It's like a holiday place. We have just, we've got when the kids were small up in the North Coast, not far from Portrush. So we head up there at the weekends just to get a bit of a rest and do the coast walks all around there. It's a lovely part of the world.
It is. I was walking one morning and this fellow came up to me on a quad bike and he said, what do you think you're doing? And I said, well, I'm just walking, enjoying the countryside, man. What do you think you're doing? And he said, you're on the fourth hole of one of the most exclusive golf courses in the world.
Oh, yeah.
And,
Portrush.
And it, because it was just a little bit of snow on the ground and I couldn't see where that I was on a golf course, but it was absolutely beautiful. So you wrote to say that you first walked with your husband, your 12-year-old son and 16-year-old daughter. The Camino, you said in your email to me, hit us hard. You said, Dan, it hit us hard. What does that mean? Like, tell us about that impact.
Well, I actually had first gone the year before. I won't go deep into that. I'd gone with some people the year before, never heard about the Camino. This person had said to me, have you ever heard about it? And I thought, no, it's a walk through Spain. I thought, hey, I love walking, I'll go. So I came home and spoke to my husband and kids and thought, you know, there's a chance to get a walk here. Would you mind if I went? So I went with a group of people that first year, and without going too much into that, that gave me the bug for it, but it didn't fulfill what I thought it could have in me. It was very rushed. I kind of felt we got up in the morning, walk, and so tired at the end of the night. And throughout the day, whilst I was walking, I seen lots of other people sat having coffee, having a glass of wine. We were just walking, and I thought, oh, there has to be. And you know what? At the end of the day, sometimes we arrived in at the same time to the different towns and villages, so they were stopping and enjoying it. And I thought, you know what? There's got to be more to this. So I came home, and probably like everyone, you try to explain the Camino. I don't know whether you really can explain the Camino to someone who hasn't walked it. I mean, I remember coming back, and we went out for a meal in a place quite close to home, and I was the waiter, as they do any holidays this year. I thought, yeah, going on a walk and holiday. And he went, sorry, And I said, a walking holiday. And he said, walking on holiday. And I said, yes. And he said, he actually went away and came back and said, did you tell me you're walking on holiday? And he was only a young guy, about 18, but he just could not get his head around it. I was classing him walking on holiday in the same scenario. So anyway, I came home, and then Christmas came that year, and I was really thinking, because when I was walking that first year, I was looking at things and tasting the food and thinking, oh, Jim, that's my husband. Jim's my husband, and Beth and Sam are my children. I thought, oh, they would love this and they would really like this. And part of me was like, oh, because we had never had a family holiday abroad. Whenever I went to college in Devon in the south of England, where I met Jim, who's from there. And so when I stayed in Devon for 6 years. So a holiday that I took from work was my mom coming to visit me, or my family coming to Devon. And then I wanted to come back home, and we moved back here. And then our holiday was used up by Jim's family coming from Devon to visit us over here.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
So, yeah, we'd never gone away anywhere, really. So I thought, do you know what? I'm going to try and book this for us. And that we're all pretty fit. My son is a boxer, and he's All Ireland title and Ulster titles, and he does his boxes, so he's very fit. And Beth's very fit and likes her walking like me, and equally Jim, he played rugby for years. So we all like the outdoor and we're all fit. But I aimed an ad and thought, oh, should I book this for us or not? And I thought about it, and I chatted to my friends and said, what do you think? So it was Christmas time, and I was in work, and I'd got promoted to manager, and I was thinking, should I do this? And my support manager that covered Northern Ireland came into work, and she handed me this. Now, this is probably a bit corny, but she said, oh, that's a present from me for working so hard. And I nearly fell off the floor when I opened it. It was a little gift bag from a jewellery shop, and it said Pilgrim on the bag.
No.
And inside was a silver shell. And I thought, oh my God, this is really, really freaking me out. But that's probably me just being corny, but I thought, is this the sign that I need to do this? So that was Christmas time. I'd been saving up some money. I'd been putting money aside thinking about this. But in the January, Sam was 12, and he'd always wanted a holiday with a swimming pool. That's all he'd always, oh, I'd love to go on holiday with a swimming pool. And we had a little touring caravan that we used to tour around in and take the kids locally up the north coast on holiday. So Jim and I were shopping one day, and we thought, you know what, this was the January. Jim said, let's just book a holiday this year. The kids are growing up, and you know. So we booked a trip to Lanzarote for the July, and that beach holidays, not my thing. Not that I hadn't been on one, but I just thought of lying all day by a beach that would drive me mad. But we thought we'll book it. So we booked Lanzarote. Jim had a lot of work on, and I thought, right, let's retreat ourselves. But equally, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, I really want to bring them on the Camino, and I was putting a little bit of savings aside. And so it was a really, really wet January day. I'll never forget it. The kids were at school, and the fire was lit, and I started looking at the computer and researching, and I thought, well, I won't die. And the flights were coming in about 600 odd quid. And anyway, I thought, oh, shall I hit the button? Shall I not hit the button? I thought, right, I'm just going to do it. So I booked the flights, and I pre-booked all the accommodation on booking.com. Mm. And that was January. And the following night, I was driving home from work and met my friend. I said, oh, you know, I booked the Camino for me and Jim and the kids last night. And I said, you know, flights weren't bad, 600 odd quid, but ended up paying 200 extra for baggage because I booked 4 bags. And she said, why? Sure, you're allowed a 10 kilo bag free. And I thought, oh no, I just paid an extra 200 quid. But it was all going to my favour. You know how it is trying to get through the airlines or anywhere like this, getting a human being or getting someone to talk to. So I thought, oh God, because I was just trying to put a little bit aside and working out. Camino's not really overly expensive for accommodation and food when you're there. But anyway, long story short, I got through the Aer Lingus. I got a lovely American lady, and I just said, look, I'm saving up for a holiday for the family. And, you know, I've paid an extra €200 for 4 bags when I didn't have to. She very kindly put the money straight back in the bag.
Oh, fantastic.
So anyway, I kept that a secret until 2 weeks before we went. It was a long few months because I booked the tickets in January. And throughout that period of time, I'd gone over to the outdoor shops, and I bought each of them each week a rucksack and socks for walking.
And keeping it secret the whole time, right?
Oh, yeah. It was hard.
It's hard. Oh, my gosh.
I know. So many times I wanted just to say, listen, but no, I read up until 2 weeks before, because I kind of thought, now if someone was to spring this on me the night before, if Jim had a sprung on me the night before, you're going to Spain tomorrow, I'd be like, oh, I need this, I need that, all these different things. So I thought, you know, we had a wee bit of organization to do. So exactly two weeks before, I just said, go down and sit in the sitting room. I've got a surprise for you. So, as I said, Beth and Sam thought, oh, she's got a new puppy. We're getting a puppy.
You're getting a puppy.
So I just came down with three rucksacks for them. And what I had done was I had made up a little booklet, the Davy Family Camino, and I had made an itinerary, and I had put a little note as to where we were going, when we were going, and a little photograph of all our accommodation, a little bit about each town that we were staying in. And I'd given them all the booklet, just with a little letter. I had typed a little letter to say that when I went the first year, I really missed them and wished they'd been with me to see and enjoy everything, and that I'd booked this week for us all to go walking, and I hope they enjoyed it. And I put in it that you're going to get tired, you're going to get blisters, you're going to get sore feet, but it's 1 week of your entire life. Just make the most of it. Try and enjoy it. And when they came back, they had 1 week at home, and then they could rest all they wanted on the holiday to Lanzarote.
So that when you talk about 1 week, where did you start walking? Like, where did you fly into, and how long did you walk?
So the first year I had done, when I went my own, I had done 10 days in the Camino Inglés. And when I went with the family, we walked from Sarria.
Uh-huh.
We flew from Dublin to Santiago de Compostela, and then we walked from Sarria to Santiago.
Oh, wonderful.
And then had a few days in the city, and the kids like being in the town at the end and going around the shops and just ending off the holiday for them, do a bit of spending.
How does a teenager... because you might just tell us, how old were the children when
Sam was 12 and Beth was 16.
Okay, 16-year-old and a 12-year-old. How do they cope with the... because it's not easy. The Camino is not easy. It's if you head out in the morning and you're walking from Sarria, you are walking, you might do 25, 30 Ks in a day. How do they cope with that? It's not easy.
Yeah, you know, they were brilliant. And I must say, there was not one word of complaint time. And I was really anxious that, because nobody really knew what to expect. And, you know, whenever I came down to the sitting room that night, I still remember Jim, because he paid for the Lanzarote holiday and we were going to Lanzarote, you know, we were still paying costs for our caravan up the North Coast. And the first thing Jim done was I gave him the little book and they were reading it, and he went, have you paid for this? Because I think he thought, oh my God, she's handed me this, and am I going to find the money to pay for this? And I had phoned his boss when I was booking the flight. I had phoned his boss to book his holiday to see if he could have that time off.
You're joking. Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, you're the best.
They over here, the old sort of holidays in July, a lot of firms would still take the 2 weeks holiday in July. So we were going on the 29th of June. So I had to make sure he had the time off work. So, but no, you know, they were absolutely brilliant. I was really anxious and I was thinking, oh God, I hope they enjoy it. And when we got off the plane in Santiago de Compostela, you know, when you get off the airplane, you're going through like the corridor to go and collect your bags. When we looked to the right, the rain was pelting down, and when we looked to the left, the sun was shining, and Sam said to me, what side are we going to? And I thought, I don't know, but I hope it's that side. But it wasn't that side. It was the side with the rain. And we got a lovely taxi lady that I'd booked to take us to our first accommodation, and the rain was coming down so fast that the wipers couldn't keep up with it. And I thought, oh my God, what have I done? This is going to be horrible. They're going to hate every moment of it. But you know what? There was a bit of drizzle the next morning, and the clouds moved, and the sky turned blue. It was amazing. And we didn't carry our backpacks, because the first year I did, but I wanted to make it a bit of a holiday for them as well. I didn't want to say, you're going to Spain, you're walking 5 days, there's a really heavy rucksack, walk. I wanted them to get as much, I didn't want to put them off, and I wanted them to carry their day pack and see what they felt about it and give them a good feeling without kind of, you know, it was a holiday as well, really. It was, yeah. It was our first family holiday, so it was a holiday as well. But, you know, they loved every minute of it. So we've decided then, we've gone back, that it will be our family tradition. Even if it's only 1 week a year, we have said, and I have said to them, when they get married, they have their own children, doesn't matter, they take up 1 week out of the year and we're all doing this together. But Jim loved it as well. I mean, Jim likes walking as well. He's pretty much into his kayaking big time, but he likes walking. Maybe he didn't do as much as me, but I remember in one instant he'd sent his brother some photographs, and the message he sent to his brother was, "This is going to be hard to beat." And I thought, success. You know, when I seen that message, I thought, right, okay. But yeah, so everyone just absolutely loved it.
What do you think it is that appeals about it so much? Because you wrote to me to say that you became a Camino boar. I thought was really funny, because I'm a Camino boar as well. I talk to people about it all the time. But you also wrote to me to say that you wrote about the love of the Camino, and you said that it hit you hard, it hit your family hard. What do you think it is about it that appeals to you so much? And why do you think you want your family to be a part of it? And going forward, what is it about the Camino, do you think? What is it?
I think maybe because for me, as I said, maybe earlier prior to us starting this conversation, so my dad died at 57. And as I said, his mother died when he was 9 and his father when he was 11. And his brothers all gradually emigrated to Canada and my dad stayed here. And, you know, when I look back, probably all of us look back and think, I wish I'd asked him more questions, because only since my relatives have started coming back from Canada and researching their father's history, and we've met with cousins, and I thought, why didn't we ask those questions? Why, you know, we never had the time, or your parents were working, you just never had the time. So we're all so busy, particularly in our house, we're all so busy. I work, Jim works his day job, and then he has lots of evening work. So sometimes Jim's working to 9, 10 o'clock. Sam's busy with his boxing, Beth's at university. There's very often no time. I mean, we try on a Sunday. We sit down and have our family dinner. But during the week, everyone's running to a class, someone's running somewhere. And I thought, you know, I don't want my kids growing up, I'm thinking, why didn't I ask mom that? Or why didn't I ask dad that? So I thought, you know what? Like that first year in the Camino, we're walking. Okay, we're not walking together that whole day, because Jim might walk on with Sam. I need people to talk to. Beth should sometimes put her headphones in and walked on, but that's her release. That's her time. But we sat down every night around the table, the four of us, had a meal, had a chat. And I just hope that when they're older, they remember all of that, and we get to talk probably more. I don't know, when we were kids growing up, we spent most of our day out in the street playing. You came out at night and went to bed. You know, we didn't have all that time. And I just think, you know, it's the one week of the year that I know we'll all be together. We'll be having a meal together. We'll have a chat. We'll have a laugh. And I just hope they're never going to remember, here, do you remember the time mom surprised us with a trip to Disneyland? You know, hey, do you remember mom took us to Spain and made us walk to Spain for a week? But I hope they remember, and I hope they remember the chats that we had and the talks that we had, because at home life's just so busy, you know, and we don't get that. And for me, I find it hard to switch off from work. My dream is to walk the whole Camino and have that period of time where, because I find I walk and I maybe 2 or 3 days into my walk before I switch off. And then you've maybe only got 3 or 4 days left and then you're back to work again. So, my dream is to have one day when I'm retirement, I could maybe do the whole thing. But I think just even for Jim, he finds it very hard to switch off from work as well. And I think I remember one day walking thinking, do you know what? I'm not even thinking about anything. And I thought, how are we, you know, just to completely switch off. And I just think we all just had our own little space, walked together, but equally walked on our own. And you know, the kids never said, I thought about this and thought, but I think that they equally had their own time walking with their headphones in, just walking, and that was their space on their own. And I think we all need that now and again.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because when you mentioned there that you hope one day they might remember this crazy holiday that the mother, your mother booked for you, and you like to think that, you know, in years to come, you will all be walking together. You may very well be grandma or grandmother, fingers crossed, and you know, let's hope that eventually happens. But I want to take you back to something you said earlier, Catherine, about your father. How old was he when he died?
He was 57.
57.
Yeah.
And you said, you know, I wished I had the chance to ask him some questions.
Yeah, because I never asked about his mom or dad, and I'm only finding out things later in life. And, you know, one thing I didn't know, and maybe some people might be horrified at me saying this, there was five boys, and they woke up in bed with their father. They all shared a bed, and he was dead. He'd had a heart attack in his sleep. And looking back on that, I was 21 when my dad died. You know, I just think, when you were 21, maybe I thought 57 was old. But, you know, it's not. But I remember my brother telling me that the local chapel where they lived had a St. Vincent de Paul box. And my father had told my brother he stole it. And that's awful me saying this. He said it was for the poor and we were poor. And God would forgive me for doing that because there was five of us to feed and we were poor too. So, and he was a religious man, he never missed math. But I thought, God, you know, they must have had a really, really hard, hard life, you know. And I never asked any questions as kids. You didn't, mm-hmm. You know. So, and as I said, been fantastic over the years. So my dad's brothers, when they all went to Canada, eventually tried to persuade my dad to go. And him and my mom had the five of us, but he went 1 year. My mom and my dad and my older sister for 3 weeks to Canada. My uncle just wanted to get him out of Belfast away from the troubles, and he spent 3 weeks there. And it wasn't for him; he just wanted to come home.
Yeah.
But over the years, my cousins have slowly started to come and visit, and it has been amazing. And it's strange because it's just an instant connection. You know, we've never met them, so. As they've been coming to visit, they've wanted to find out more, and we've all found out a little bit more. I thought, God, you know, why don't we not ask these questions or talk about any of this? You know, it's sad too.
Yeah. What's interesting to me, Catherine, is, you know, your family migrated to Canada. My family from Ireland, from Tipperary, migrated to Australia. And there were two twin brothers in 1899, and the mother had twins, and there was only work enough for one of the boys, so she sent the other boy to Australia, and there are now almost 400 descendants of that boy in Australia. And my sister Amanda and I were the first ones to go back in the early 1990s. We went back and connected with them, and I actually stayed in the house where they left, where Darius Hogan left in 1899. I stayed in that house, and I said to the lady staying in the house, which was I think my mother's, oh gosh, I don't remember now, some distant relative anyway, and I said, where is everybody? She said, oh, they'll be at the pub. And I said, well, we chip off the old block, you know, that's just like us, I suppose. So my sister and I went down to the pub, and we walked in, you know, and it was all this noise. Then it just went quiet. And everyone looked around at us and said, well, who are they? They look just like us. They look just like us. And I don't know where in the family tree they fell and where I fell on the family tree, but they looked just like us. They talked just like us. It was just the most extraordinary thing. And family is so important, and family is so important on the Camino too. I guess what I wanted to ask you about is the the way the Camino resonated with you and your family when you walked, did you sense then when you got home that there was an element of the Camino in your home life with your children and your husband? Did you sort of sense that something had changed a little bit when you got home?
Yeah, I think we all just probably felt that, my God, we had time and time to talk to one another. And I mean, we do try to eat together every night, but it doesn't happen. But yeah, I think we all just realized we got a peace from it, I think, and a bit of a calmness, and realized, you know what? Life is so busy. Let's just sit down here and have a chat. And we all equally got the bug. I mean, I didn't think the kids really would have wanted to go back. But when I mentioned then, yeah, we'll go back and see. Yeah, what are we going to do? And the first year I went on my own, when I came back, the kids said I was a bit calmer and not as stressed. I don't know how long that lasted. I am a bit of a stress head, but Jim is the calm one in our house. I've heard people say to the kids, well, you know, what did you enjoy the most about it? And they were like, I don't know. I just think everyone finds a community. I'm thinking, unless you've done it.
No, but it's interesting you should say that, because I wondered what your children say to their friends when they ask about it.
Beth, like me, loves to walk. And so I think what they also loved about it was, what I wanted to give them was a bit of, Beth was getting ready to go to university in a year or two, and I wanted her, she didn't want to move away from home. And I kind of wanted her to see there's a bigger life out there. There's more to here. You know, we're not just here in this little village. You know, there's more to life. And Sam was studying a little bit of Spanish at school, so I wanted him to see a bit of that culture that he was learning about in school. And I said to them both before we went, I don't have any Spanish. Beth done Spanish for a while in school. But I said, use every little word that you have. Just the people will thank you if you try to make an effort.
Yeah.
Because I find we go away and everybody can speak English. And I think we need to make a little bit of an effort. So I thought, even just try, use whatever little bit of Spanish you have. And eat the food, try the local food. And Beth met, we walked with the mother and her daughter from America, and the daughter was studying to be a doctor, and Beth had a great day walking with them and a great chat. And I thought, you see, there's a big, big wide world out there. You know, we're not just in this small little place. And, you know, one of the things we laughed at, my husband hates fish, absolutely hates fish, unless it's battered with salt and vinegar covered in it with a pile of chips beside it from the chip shop. He won't open a tin of tuna in the house, you know. And we walked a really, really long day from Malid to Azura.
Yeah, that's nice.
And it was a long, long, hot day. And when we got back to our accommodation, shower and everything, the host had got this big table for us all, and this big crock pot was put in the middle of the table. It was like a fish chowder.
Oh, yeah.
And the man who doesn't like fish cleared about four bowls of this fish chowder in the space of half an hour because he was so hungry. And I thought he didn't like fish. So, and one night then, the second year, I think we were in Pontevedra, and Jim and I were sat downstairs outside in the little seats having a glass of wine, and the kids were upstairs in the accommodation. And we'd had our meal earlier in the evening, but we'd seen all these lovely tapas and side dishes coming out. And we thought, oh, yeah, I said to Jim, let's order a side calamari. You know, the rings look delicious. So we phoned the kids up and said, you know, we've got some tapas, come down. So Sam came down and I said, there's some lovely onion rings there, Sam, really fresh, crispy onion rings. It was calamari, though. And he sat beside us and he picked it, and we watched him, and we drank our wine and we watched him and said, did you enjoy that? Yeah, it was lovely. I said, it was calamari. No, it wasn't. I said, it was. But, you know, we laughed. I thought, if I had told him, that was calamari, he wouldn't have touched it. So, you know, I just wanted them to see the culture. We went to Lanzarote then later that year when we got home, and honestly, it was egg, sausage, chips. We all realised it wasn't the holiday for us. It wasn't for us. We prefer the getting up and walking and meeting people, and, you know, it was just, I don't know, it was just a brilliant, brilliant time.
It gets in your blood or something. I don't know. It kind of gets in your spirit because, you know, I don't know that it's for everybody, because you get up in the morning, you get up very early, you walk. And I was only just saying to my wife tonight, there's something about stopping for that second breakfast and seeing a big group of people that you've walked with. There might be some Germans, some Swedish, some Filipinos, some Koreans or something. And you just sit with them and think, you know what? Doesn't matter if I sit here and have another coffee, or heck, it's only 10:30 in the morning. I might have a beer. It doesn't matter. No one cares. No one's judging you. And you might have a chat with somebody about what they did or what they want to do, or they might not want to talk about anything in particular. It's just, and in many ways, when you think then, oh, I still have 20 kilometers to walk, it still is relaxing though.
Yeah, there's no clock watching. I think I spent my days clock watching. Got to be in work for this time. Got to get Sam to the school bus for that time. Got to get home for that time. Dinner, boxing class, keep fit. And as you say, it doesn't matter how many cups of coffee you have. There's no set time that you've got to be there, and you can just enjoy it. Yeah. And that's what I love about it. I'm not watching. I mean, it gets to the point. I think the longest we were there was 14 days, and I think there came that point where Jim said, "What day is it today?" You know, how often do you get that at home?
But
you never get that at home.
No. No. Oh, that's amazing. Hey, so tell us about the very first time that you as a family walked into Santiago de Compostela.
Oh, it was brilliant. Well, I kind of knew what to expect because I'd walked in the year before the heavens had opened, and it was absolutely bouncing it down the drain. But yeah, we walked in with the American lady and her daughter, and we all walked in together and arrived at the square, and oh, it was just brilliant. We got a photograph on the steps, and we got a photograph of I can't remember their names, but we got a photograph all together. And then we all went round to this lovely little bar, the six of us, and toasted ourselves for walking in, and had a few drinks and a few tapas, and we then went. The cathedral mass was, I mean, I grew up Catholic. I was sent out to Mass every Sunday. I instilled that in the kids to a certain point where they made their own decision and they have their faith. But I don't make them go to Mass every Sunday. I mean, we were sent out to Mass every Sunday. I don't make them do that. But we went to Mass, and we seen the Bonte Romero. You know, we seen all the proper pilgrim Mass. Mm-hmm. And I think it just, no matter, as you... People are from all over the world, from every religion, every denomination. It's just mesmerizing. And we got to see the Mass, which was brilliant, because you're not always sure if you're going to have the full, you know, the pilgrim Mass and see all that. But it was just absolutely brilliant. And that finished the walk off, because I was really hoping that they would have got to see that, because I know it isn't always scheduled. But so that just finished the walk off. And Jim isn't a religious guy. He's not religious at all, but again, there's just something mesmerizing about all of that.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you a question, and you don't have to answer it if you don't want to. When you went to that pilgrim's mass, did you say a prayer?
Yeah, I said just thank you. Thank you for getting us all here, safely, and that they enjoyed it and let us... Just that we made it, we got there safe as a family, and thank you for all that.
Yeah. You know what I find really interesting about that, Catherine, is that when I was a kid, I was taught a prayer was an intention. If you wanted something, or you wished for something, or you hoped for something, now I'm in my mid-50s now. These days when I say a prayer, it's more often than not saying thank you.
Yeah, I find that. I mean, I love heading up to the mountain for a run at night, and if I see a lovely sunset, or when the summer's coming to an end and the night's getting a little bit dimpsy and it's fresh air and I'm running, and I just think, thank you. Thank you for the view, and that I'm fit and healthy to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, and your children are there with you too. So fantastic! Yeah, what a wonderful, wonderful blessing. And so then I wonder. I won't ask you to put words in your husband's mouth or your children's mouth, but how do you sum up the Camino? If someone asks you, someone at work or one of your children's friend's parents say, what's this Camino thing? How do you explain it to people?
Well, I mean, I do say it's an ancient pilgrimage, you know, but I don't do it for that. I don't know enough about all that history, but I don't do it for that. I do it for my love of walking. And I just tell people it's a walk through Spain that people do for lots of different reasons. I do it because I absolutely love my walking. And the side effects might be some blisters and sore feet, but the long-term side effects, I think, are health, happiness, and well-being.
Health, happiness, and well-being. That's a really good motto.
I think they're the long-term side effects of it, apart from you can forget about the blisters and you can forget about the tiredness and the sore feet. And maybe, I mean, we didn't stay in albergues because Sam was 12 and Beth was 16 at the time. As I said, I wanted to make a bit of a holiday as well. So I just booked small family-run bed and breakfast.
Right.
I would have got a quadruple room with a private bathroom, or I would have got a twin room for myself and Beth and one for Jim and Sam. And I know it's our Camino. I don't care what people say about, oh, you didn't rough it. I didn't want to rough it with the kids. I wanted them to get enjoyment out of it as well. I mean, that's not to say, Beth talked about maybe going back with her boyfriend one year and she wants to carry her backpack and she wants to stay in the hostel. So she, you know, she's got that.
Yeah.
I think, as I said, we didn't carry our bags. I did the first year, but the second year we didn't. Now, Jim and I were due to go last September. The family Camino was cancelled and Beth had gone to Canada and Jim and I were going to go. And if we all said if we go back again, maybe we'll carry our bags this time because they've got a feel for it now and they know what they'd like to do. So,
everybody's different. I was only just saying to Jen, my wife, tonight, who am I to judge anybody? I don't understand everybody's story. I don't know their history. I don't know what their circumstances are. It's not for me to say, oh, you're not carrying your backpack, so you're not a true pilgrim. Who gives this? I mean, who really? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Worry about yourself. Stop worrying about other people, right? But I wonder then, now that we've covered the family, we've covered the religious aspect of it in a very gentle sense, but what's one thing that you learned about yourself, do you think, in this whole Camino journey?
I find it hard to switch off, and I think, well, people tell me I'm very hard on myself, and probably I am. I push myself, and I maybe expect so much of myself, and especially in my work, and if I get things wrong, I tend to blame myself for things that maybe aren't my fault. And the kids said after I came back the first year, I was calmer, and I probably was. That probably maybe didn't last too long. But I worry too much. I'm a natural worrier. My mother was a natural worrier, and I used to say, oh, for God's sake, stop. And I think I'm just following in her footsteps. But I'll give you an example. So I do worry. I worry about other people. And someone once said to me, you take the world's worries on your shoulder. You can't fix everybody. And I thought, no, I know. But it's nice to try and help people. But this might be a bit corny. I had a bit of an incident the weekend. Tried to help someone out. I'm not going to go into all that. But they really, really hurt me and upset me. And I had been trying to help. And I came home. I'm reading a book at the moment called The Pilgrimage by Paulo Coelho.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And I was sitting on Saturday evening and I was thinking, oh God, you know, this has pretty much upset me, what's happened here. And I just happened to read a line in this book and I'm going to read it out to you.
Go ahead.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it says, why be fearful of saying no to someone or of leaving something undone when the most important thing of all was to enjoy your life fully? And I thought, you know what, that's just what I needed at that time on Saturday night, because...
That is unbelievable what you just said then. Someone read that quote to me today.
Really?
That's unbelievable.
Well, those few lines just hit me on Saturday night. I thought, you know what? That's right.
When you read that on Saturday night, do you think, after what had happened to you, and I don't need to know what happened to you, but if it's something that upset you enough that you felt you needed some form of solace in some respect, what do you think? Do you think I'm okay? Do you think this is the message I needed to hear? Do you think, you know, take that? I mean, or do you just...
Do you just think,
I'm going to be okay?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be okay. Here I am worried about someone else, but it was there, but I don't know if I'm wrong. They hurt me and I'm worried about them. And I thought, you know what? That's what I need. I'm not going to be fearful of saying... We don't want to say no to people. We want to try and help people. I don't anyway. We try to help people as much as we can. But that instant, I thought, you know, I was doing this as a favour for you and I didn't want to say no because I wanted to get you out of a sticky situation. And this is what happened. And now I'm the one sat here upset about it. And I read that and thought, you know what? That's calmed me down. I'm not, you know, that's... Two lines, that was all I needed to sort of put me at peace a bit.
Yeah, the pilgrimage, the Camino provides.
Yes.
It's so magic, isn't it? It's so magic.
And you know what? The first year we walked Sarria to Santiago, I think it was just coming out of Sarria. We didn't bring our hiking poles because I know there's sometimes I'd read about it, some of the airlines don't like to bring poles and stuff. So we didn't bring any hiking poles, but... Just out of Sarria, Sam, you know how they say the lovely wooden staffs for walking, and Sam seeing a lovely staff, and we thought, yeah, I get it, and he got a lovely light coloured one, and he walked and he had the staff and he was great walking along with it, and he decided to get his stamps on his staff as well as his passport.
Oh wow!
And because some of the stamps are print red, black, blue, it looked amazing. And his dad said, when we go home, I put a coat of varnish over that. And, you know, and people commented about it along the way. Oh, wow, that's great. Well, and he had this staff, and everywhere we went, he got his stamps. And it was lovely, and it was his little bit of his Camino, and he was so proud of it and the stamp. And anyway, we got back to, we were flying home, and it had the metal tip on the bottom, and the airline said, it's going to have to go in with the luggage. And we thought, right, that's fine. And our bags went through, and... The paper labels went on the bags and off them through the belt, and there was the lady on the desk had put the staff behind her, and the bags had gone on through, and I thought, are you going to put that staff through? Yes, she said, you know, we'll go through in a few minutes, and we've never seen it again.
Oh no.
Yeah, I went to the airport, I went to Lost Property, I went to Dublin, and you know that would mean, well, I don't think that would mean anything to anyone else, only us. Because if I seen that, if you had that and showed that to me, I think that's lovely, but that has no meaning to me. You know, and so if there's anyone out there who's seen this staff, no questions asked, contact Dan.
Contact me.
It was so nice. You can just imagine this lovely wooden staff, all the stamps all along it. And Sam was so proud of it. And we thought, you know, you'll have that years come that. And no, never got it again.
I wonder if that perhaps there's a journey waiting for him down the track where he might.
Someone will just present him with this, yeah.
Yeah, or do it again. Yeah, maybe. Tell us another Camino story, Catherine.
Whenever we were in the last Camino, when we had got our bus from Estella to Biarritz, we were going back to Biarritz, but we got in the bus station in San Sebastian, and we had like 15 minutes slot to then get the next bus to Biarritz, where we were staying for our last night to fly out off. We missed the bus, and I thought, right, we've got two, three hours to kill, but that's fine. We go for a coffee, and I'm standing in the queue to buy the bus ticket. And this guy stands behind me and he says, that's an accent I know too well. And he said, where are you from? And I said, Belfast. And he said, oh, what are you doing here? And I said, we're here on the Camino, but, you know, we're waiting to get the bus. We've missed the bus. Oh, don't worry about that. Where you want to go to? He went up and spoke in Spanish and bought our tickets. He said, right, come with me. So he took us across the bridge in San Sebastian for a coffee. And he was with a friend of his, another guy from here. And you know what? Such a small world. We went across the bridge. He sat with us and had coffee. And he said, where do you live? And I told him, and he said, oh, do you know such and such? And there's a guy that I walk with over here, Pat. And it turned out they were lifelong friends.
No.
And he was now living in Pamplona teaching English. And his wife was a nursery teacher at the school my daughter had gone to. And I remember her, and I thought, my God, such a small, small world. You know, here we were just in the queue for the bus, and he heard me speak. And I came home, and I was in my local supermarket one night, and a girl I know said, well, you know, do you have a good time on the Camino? And I thought, yeah. And she's let me have a look at some photos, and I was flicking through the photos, and there was one I took of us sat with this guy. And she went, oh, my God, is that Hugh? And I said, yes. And she said, he's married to my sister-in-law. She goes, I know him. And so, you know, yeah, it's just a small world, you know. Just and another guy I met one night sitting in Zabiri, and he said, oh, he said, I know a girl that went up to the north to work, and she works in one of the veterinary clinics. And I said, oh, yeah, that's where I work. I said, what's her name? He told me her name. I thought, I work with her.
No.
And, yeah, and I took a photograph of myself and him and sent it back to the girl at work and said, you know, taking a stroll through Spain, look who I've met, you know. And I walked with an Austrian lady one day, and I was wearing her walking trousers, and she said, oh, you're from Northern Ireland? And I said, yes. And she said, my daughter, they were from Austria, my daughter done her work experience there. And I said, oh, where does she do it? And she done it in the health centre up the road. And, you know, such a small, small world.
It is a small world. And you know, it's like, I remember when we first were having children, my wife said, oh, we've got to go and buy a pram. And everywhere I looked for the next 3 weeks, I saw prams. And when, you know, when you're going to buy a new car, you say, oh, will we buy a Honda or a Mazda? Everywhere you look, you see a Honda or a Mazda. It's like when you start talking about the Camino, everywhere you go, you see the Camino. People talk about the Camino. It's amazing, isn't it? It's so incredible.
I know. It's amazing. And I just quickly, whenever we came down from this, Alto del Pedro on the Hill of Forgiveness.
Yeah.
We were coming down that, and I moved my leg a certain way, and I thought, what have I done? I have really, really hurt my leg. Anyway, we got in, we had our meal. That whole night, I thought, I cannot move my leg right down the side. I'd never had pain like it, and I thought, I might have to taxi tomorrow, guys. This is going to kill me, but I really have to taxi it. So we had a little apartment in the little narrow street. We were like three floors up, and I hadn't slept all night. And the Camino provides, I found a bag of frozen peas in the freezer of this apartment. So I'd spent the night with frozen peas in my leg. But I woke up, I couldn't, it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. And then I sat up and I was looking over the little balcony, and it was about 5:30 in the morning. I thought, what is that noise outside? And I opened the wooden window shutters, and it was the monks chanting in one of the monasteries. And it was pitch black along the street, but the echo was coming down the street. It gives me shivers now. I'll never forget it. But some of the pilgrims were starting to walk down the street, and there was a guy from over here that I'd met the night before, and I'm three floors up, and he's walking along, and I'm shouting, Steve. And honestly, I think he thought the God was calling from above. I'm up high. It was pitch black. The monks were chanting, and he looked over his right shoulder, and obviously there was no one there. And he looked over his left shoulder, and there was no one there. This was comical for me, despite my pain, because I was high up, and I called him again. And I must have called him about three or four times, and I think he was really beginning to think, oh my God, you know, what is going on? And finally, I said, it's me up here, because I got some tablets off him for my leg. But that sound of the monks chanting throughout that little narrow street in the pitch, oh, amazing. It's little things like that. That I never forget,
Oh my God, that just goes to you. Look, Catherine, it's been absolutely delightful to talk to you. I know that you were a bit apprehensive about talking to me, but
I was.
You've done brilliantly, and it's been wonderful, actually, a terrific insight. I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you. I want to say thank you for taking the time to talk to us, and I know raising teenagers has its challenges. I know it. Indeed, many of my listeners know it. I suppose the best that we can do is to leave the lines of communication open, and how wonderful that you've had the Camino to provide that opportunity to grow closer to them, and yet to provide them with an opportunity to grow in their own way. And we can't expect or insist that our teenagers listen to us. We can only hope, but perhaps by our actions, we can provide an example for their journey. So thank you so much for talking to us. Blessings to you in Northern Ireland from us in Sydney, Australia, from pilgrims all around the world. And to you, I hope one day our paths cross, perhaps even on the Camino de Santiago. Yeah. And one day I'll get to Northern Ireland and I'll come up there, sing some songs for you, and it'll be fabulous. All right. Now, buen camino.
Take you on a walk. Yeah, buen camino. Thank you so much. And thank you for the podcast. I keep you going when I'm walking. Thank you so much.
I could listen to Catherine all day. Such a beautiful voice. My guest this week, the Northern Irish pilgrim, Catherine Davy. There's an old saying attributed to the American columnist Bob Talbot. Teaching kids to count is fine, but teaching them what counts is best. Thank you for your company this week and every week. Until next week, I'm Dan Mullins. Buen Camino.
Somewhere along the way, somewhere along the way,